We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus. In for David Inge, I'm Tom Rogers. And at this time each month, the first Friday of every month, we bring in our dog training experts. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel from the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana are here to answer your questions about how the pups are behaving. And if you have such questions, you can give us a call during the next hour. Our phone number is 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, and outside the local calling area, 1-800-222-9455. We can also take your emails at will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. And good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Tom. It's nice to see you.
I just want to make sure my cell phone's
off here. Turn off all electronic devices. Put your seats in your upright position.
See, I don't fly, so
okay. We'll be here around to take any service items you may have. But you've had a busy week at the ranch, Jim. You've got a new litter.
We have, it's our first litter. It's keeping with our puppy mill standards.
Now.
First litter in 4 years.
Wow.
Except for your dog.
For disclosure's sake, just to make sure that there's no bias or anything going on, I am the proud owner of one of the Malamutes from Jim's.
And a lucky kennel. Person you are.
Chase is he's a piece of work.
He's beautiful.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, well, we had him
he's
last weekend.
He's listening at home.
We had him last weekend.
Yeah, he stayed over last weekend while I was absent and.
Time went fast from the time you announced to the time they were born. To me, it went fast.
Well, it's as you get older, time seems to be slipping.
Yeah, you must be familiar
into the future.
With that.
Yeah, I'm up.
Well, what kinds of things are we talking about today? We hope. First of all, we need to make let people know that if they wait all year long to go to the College of Veterinary Medicine each year to the VetMed Open House, and they want to see all the exhibits and. They have dog training people there, too, I believe, but it's not going to be in April like it usually is, or March, or in the spring.
No.
It's going to be this Sunday, day after tomorrow.
This Sunday, 10 to 3 are the times, and you couldn't possibly ask for a more beautiful day to go to the VetMed Open House.
So what kinds of things, I have not been to one, I hate to say.
Tom,
so you're going to have to tell me what's going on at these.
This is it's such an incredible, I think there are only 28 veterinary teaching schools in the country.
Wow.
I don't know where that came from. I hope it's accurate.
But it was so accurate 30 years ago. Oh. I don't know if it's still accurate.
But we're so lucky to have it here. Mm-hmm. Anytime you go to the, for example, the small animal clinic, you'll see people from all over the Midwest there, and we've got it right in our backyard. So
all of the nation's vets come from 28 different schools.
Yeah,
which
I hope that's right. I'm sure we'll get a call if it's not right.
I've had friends who had either tried to or succeeded in becoming veterinarians, and the rumor is that vet school is often harder to get into than med school. It's so difficult because you have different if you're going to become a small animal doctor, for example, you have to know at least two different physiologies, cat and dog physiology, and then stuff other than that.
Oh yeah, and then there's rotation and large animal and
yeah.
But you've been to the open house, haven't you? Well, years past, we used to do fly ball demos and agility demos. And remember our infamous drill team? Do you remember that one?
I remember the drill team.
The
drill team was hilarious.
Yeah. We had dentists doing obedience.
There you go.
But so we're not a part of it this year as such. But it's great because you can go there and you see the equipment that they have for – making MRIs, CAT scans, you name it, they've got it there. It's human medicine.
Do they have the cow with the stomach open? And
I believe that that is an attraction, yes.
And I did confirm that yesterday because I think one of the first thoughts everybody has when they hear, you know, local people think about VetMed Open House and they think about the cow with the hole in the stomach. And
yeah, the window.
It's just a rare
the
attraction, but there's so much there to see and do. And
the two-headed snake, they have that there?
No.
No, oh.
No.
That's
something different.
That's the fair.
That's the fair.
Sorry, different.
Yeah, and then I remember 1 year, the strides and breakthroughs in cancer that they're making in our companion animals. That's a highlight of the VetMed Open House, and there's a lot of poignancy there because so many people have been touched by that. But you know, they've done great things there. So it's a wonderful event. So Sunday from 10 to 3, don't miss it. It's an all family event.
Yeah, cancer treatment for animals. There's a lot of and the one thing that I think of when I think of cancer treatment for animals is it still costs an awful lot of money. And we're not talking about, you know, you carry insurance at work with your for your family members. For pets, it's an added expense one way or the other. You pay for the insurance, which is not cheap, or you pay for
the care
treatment, which is, you know, understandably with all the specialization that goes on, pretty expensive.
Yes, there is no denying that fact, but the fact that it's available to us.
And it's gotten so much better, too.
Yes, yes.
Right.
And if it can add some time to your life of your animal, then it's so worth it.
333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. We're talking about dog training and dog behavior, and Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us, and we appreciate your calls. Slow Friday, actually. I'm kind of surprised.
Because so it's far, beautiful out.
Yeah, everybody's
it's gorgeous
out
day.
Kites.
They're out training their
and
dogs.
I don't think people are used to us being on at this time yet.
No, you've been regular fixtures on the Afternoon Magazine for a long time, and now on Focus.
I know. Robin's still asleep, so she didn't get up to
I'm sure she loves
12,
you saying 30.
Robin, if you're awake, call in your question.
We should mention that this weekend as well, the AP –
DT, Association of Pet Dog Trainers is the organization name.
Are having a rally match or trial.
Trial.
At our building. It's a non-AKC venue, but they have rally and they'll have it tomorrow and Sunday.
And what does a rally consist of?
Rally is essentially obedience, regular obedience with sits and downs and fasts and slows and healing. But it has the, if you know what a sports car rally was, it has signs that are on the floor and the handler walks in and does whatever the sign says. So if the sign says sit your dog, you sit, and then you go to the next station. They're all numbered.
Ah, okay.
And depending on how well you do it and whether the dog does everything, there's a score and there's a time element. And but all the exercises, or almost all the exercises, are regular obedience exercises.
Now, how does this differ from an AKC, American Kennel Club, event?
Well, it's AKC has rally as well.
Okay.
The APDP.
APDT.
Started because they will allow any dog that registers with the APBB to show. And that what that means is that mixed breed dogs can participate as well. And they've been doing that for years. The AKC only recently, in the last year, has allowed non-AKC registered dogs to participate in obedience, agility, and rally.
It's interesting because, it has only been purebred dogs before that. So that's everything except, obviously, show or confirmation or anything like that, because obviously there is no mixed breed category.
That's right.
Yeah. 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455, your dog training questions, dog behavior questions for Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm. We have a call on line one. Good morning, line one.
Good morning. I have a question for – a two-part question. One would be I have a toy poodle, about 8 pounds, a year and a half old. Just wondering what would be the ideal age to start doing obedience training? Obviously, you should do a little at a time, but
a year and a half ago, I think.
A year and a half ago, nice. Well, we got her about a year ago, so I guess we're a little late on that. And then the other question is, when walking, she has a tendency to pull, and what would be the best way to break that?
Carol?
Oh, you know, I was just you can start training at any time. I've got a dog in my current class. I've got one that's 8.5 years old. I have a 4-month-old dog, so any time is better than no time. And as far as the pulling in a toy poodle, I would Jim's raising his hand. But
can
I know
I,
people
please
that
don't say
have,
get a toy sled. Don't say that.
No, people that have dogs that pull, especially with smaller dogs, like to put them in a harness. So
oh,
I would
we have her in a harness already.
Yeah, and see you know, I know with the small breeds that you've got some trachea issues if they pull too hard on the collar. But if you think about, and this is where Jim's going to want to jump in, but putting a dog in a harness encourages that pulling desire. No matter if the dog weighs
she
5 pounds or...
She definitely choked herself up, so...
Yeah, but getting her into class and learning the tools to keep her walking on a loose leash, that will go a long way towards eliminating that. Yes, Jim?
I wouldn't worry too much about her choking herself. If in reaction to having a choke collar on, she pulls and goes... she's probably lying.
Okay.
But a harness is fine with a smaller dog. And the reason it might be better than a choker is it's very difficult to moderate, you know, your corrections with that small a dog.
Yeah.
But the way to the best way to teach her not to pull, which for an 8-pound dog, you know, it's not a big problem because you probably weigh more than 8 pounds.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, but is this. You go out. She wants to go for a walk. You just stand there, and she will pull and pull and pull and pull. Don't correct her. Don't praise her. Don't criticize her. Don't do nothing. You just stand there, and she'll pull and pull and pull and pull. And finally, she'll get tired of it and wonder what's going on, and she'll walk back to you, or at least she'll let up. And as soon as she lets up pulling, I mean, the instant you start walking, and of course, she's going to say, oh, okay, fine, and she's going to start pulling again. And you're going to stop again, and you're not going to say anything. You're not going to say good dog or bad dog or anything. You're just going to stand there. Soon, and you just keep doing that. This takes a little bit of patience and investment of time, but... it's a very good way to train them.
Okay.
She will figure out that the only time she gets to walk is when she's not pulling.
Okay.
Yeah. We have dogs that are in kennel runs, and when I come, they understand that I have to do something to the door in order for it to open. They don't know what it is, thankfully, but and so very often they'll jump and scream and. So when they do that, I just stop. I don't say anything. I just stop. And they keep jumping and jumping. And finally, you know, they can't jump forever. So they stop jumping. And as soon as they stop jumping, I start walking. And, of course, they start jumping again. It takes about 5 minutes. But after 5 minutes, they stop jumping and I open the door. So I don't think it'll take that long with your dog to teach her not to pull.
She already sits when... I'll walk her and she'll start pulling. I'll stop and she sits down because she thinks we're crossing a road or something. And then, like, when she sits down, I start going again, but then she immediately starts pulling. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, what you want to do
more time.
If she sits, that's fine. You can, but don't start walking. I mean, if she is, you know, has this additional behavior, you have to account for that.
Okay.
I'm not saying, you know, don't say anything to her. You know, you're going to want to say something pleasant. But don't say anything unpleasant and don't make any leash corrections at all.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Well, thank you very much.
And thank you for your call, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. And, Jim, I don't know whether it was you or somebody else who had mentioned that, you know, when you think about putting a collar on a dog and they pull and pulls on the collar, you have to remember that dog physiology is different from human physiology. So you think they're choking, but their windpipes are not
it's
in the same
trachea.
Place. That, yeah.
Yeah, and it's uncomfortable, and it can cause damage in a small dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I would only use a nylon collar or a leather small collar. I would never put a choke collar on a small dog like that.
Hmm. The dog's neck is a lot more powerful than ours is because they don't have a collarbone. Uh-huh. And the muscles that go from around the shoulders go kind of go around and up the neck. So they have a lot of musculature in their neck that we don't have. Also, their windpipe trachea goes. Ours is virtually, you can feel it just
right
here. Theirs goes deep into the neck a lot faster.
Right into the center.
Yeah,
of the
so
neck.
It's a lot harder to hit their windpipe with a choke collar. If it's down any distance at all, it's not going to hit that.
But when you've got a small dog, of course.
When you have a small dog, I worry more about the whiplash.
Yeah.
Because people give very hard corrections. Mm-hmm. Actually, the opposite is also true. Everybody is so afraid that the dog is going to choke itself to death by pulling. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen a dog that was that dumb yet. Some come close. But that when the dog starts to pull, they start walking. And so what I explained to the gentleman earlier is exactly the opposite. The dog
they're going to
gets
come
to
back.
Get the dog gets to walk if it pulls.
Uh-huh.
And you try to accommodate that because you're afraid he's going to hurt himself, but he's not.
All right. Let's take a call on line two in Champaign. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a dog who is it's a like a spaniel Australian Shepherd mix, and she's a sweet dog. She's about 7 years old, but she has this thing. Sometimes we go for a walk, and it seems like she's terrified of something, and she's in like a big rush to get back home as quickly as possible. And she definitely ends up sounding like Darth Vader because she's choking herself so badly on her leash. And then other walks will be perfectly fine.
Yeah, dogs are crazy. I don't think we've ever said that.
You know, I was just sitting here thinking of a story. Did she always do this?
Well, we got her from the Humane Society, and she had been a stray, apparently, for months. And so I don't know what happened to her the first year of her life. But she will sometimes go out into the yard and then come racing to the back door, scratching on it with this absolute terrified look in her eyes.
You know, there's something, and it's probably not this, but this reminds me of a story about a family here, and the dog refused one day to go out the front door any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Refused.
Mm-hmm.
Would panic. And it was a friend of mine that worked with them, and through much, you know, trying to remember what occurred, that one particular day, they were walking out the front door with the dog, as usual, and a hot air balloon was going over the house.
Mm-hmm.
The noise from
you know,
the hot air balloon.
A lot of dogs hate those.
Yeah, the hot air balloon noise freaked out the dog,
mm-hmm,
big time. And then he associated going out the front door with that noise.
Yeah.
And
I try to listen to see. Sometimes I'll hear a train in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll think, oh, I wonder if she thinks that's the hot air balloon.
Or, you know, it could be another sound or something that triggers some reaction in her that you may never know.
Could be an odor.
Could be an odor. Okay. It could be.
Yeah. Sometimes she does sniff the air.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Dogs are crazy. We don't. I'm making this up, but probably half of the information about the world for a dog comes through their nose. You know, and they can smell things that we couldn't possibly imagine. So there are things in the air that are swishing around, and if she has a bad association with one of them, you know, then she's going to act frightened.
Yeah, it's so funny because I have another dog, a Shih Tzu purebred, who just doesn't care about any of that.
Oh well, yeah, because and dogs are as different as we are. We could probably see or hear something and just go about the rest of our lives without a second thought, whereas others, it would leave a real scar or an issue for them. So I
try to, when we're walking like that, though, I try to comfort her and tell her it's okay and make her take her, like, two blocks. She's not happy about it. She'll start and stop, but I'm, you know, come on, let's go. Should I just do that? So it kind of disassociates.
Do you have your Shih Tzu with you when this happens?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She just keeps going.
Well, that's good because the Shih Tzu is, you know, hopefully inspiring her to not be too afraid.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is find something that she really likes to eat.
Oh, it's everything.
Well, that, yeah. Do you give her cookies then?
I do.
Yeah. It's very difficult to be frightened and eat at the same time. And so if you can just stuff some goodie in her,
mm-hmm,
Tom laughs, but the I forgot what they're called, the autonomic nervous system mm-hmm. and the other one.
Sympathetic.
Sympathetic. Thank you very much. They can't operate at the same time.
There you go.
So if she's eating, and very often you can't get a frightened dog to eat, but if you can, it reduces the
Hopefully
stress.
Hopefully the dog doesn't say, I'm going to be frightened more often.
Yeah. No, that won't
That's
happen.
Not, yeah, no. It's not
But put
likely.
Some, yeah, take some cookies in your pocket. Since you don't know what's going to precipitate that,
right.
then you'll be prepared when the
yeah.
you'll be prepared when the behavior occurs, and then you can work with it that
and
way.
And give the Shih Tzu some cookies, too.
Oh, she'll make sure that I do.
Yeah, good. But you start to set up this kind of competition where if she gets one, why don't I get one, you know, and it gets the dog's mind off of whatever's frightening it.
Okay. That's helpful. Yeah, I haven't tried that, so I will.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for your call. Our numbers are 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455 outside local calling area. And the big takeaway we have from the show so far is that dogs are crazy.
Although well, I like to say dogs is crazy, but
same thing.
I'm trying to be grammatical.
One thing that I wrote down on the subject of food that thought maybe I could ask about is food possessiveness. Looking back over my dog ownership career, I had one where one other dog would try to get within 5 feet of the bowl, even if he wasn't eating there at the time, and he'd growl and chase her off and that sort of thing. How do you deal with the issue of
And we have
food
a dog.
Possession. And you're talking about not just scaring off other dogs, but the owner. You know, it'll mm-hmm. stick around the bowl and say, "Go away."
Well, in terms of eating dinner, mm-hmm. John Rogerson had a very good suggestion, and that was you give the dog for dinner about maybe a third or a quarter of its food, and he starts to eat it, and you come up then with another bowl with about a quarter of its food in.
Hmm.
And once he's finished with this one, you put that bowl down and you take away the first bowl. And then he'll eat that, and you do the same, let's say, three or four times.
So you let him finish the first bowl and then take the bowl away as you're giving him the other one.
Right. When you take away one bowl, what you should do is maybe put a big dog cookie or piece of liver in it and give it back to him so that the dog gets the idea that taking the bowl turns out to be a good thing.
Mm. Now, see, I like that, but I have a student right now that takes the bowl away from her dog while it's eating because years ago that was to prove that you could.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her to add food to that bowl.
And
not to not to even take away the bowl, just to walk by and
I was gonna say,
add
on
something
the dog,
to mm-hmm. the bowl.
That would be kind of risky to put your hand right in there.
But how annoying would it be for us to have somebody come along and take your plate away while you're eating repeatedly? I mean, it's the same
principle.
Well,
how annoying would it be if somebody took your wallet and put $1,000 in it and gave it back to you?
Yeah. Well,
you can't take my wallet.
We're working on the same principle, but I think that initially it would be good to add the food to the dog's bowl,
mm-hmm.
if your dog has an issue. If your dog doesn't have an issue, then I think it's great to do the other.
The taking food away is a standard puppy exercise.
Right.
Mm.
And 99.9% of the dogs aren't going to have an issue with it. We even have a dog that's food protective, but Robin and I can take the food away, but if another dog comes by, then he's
And then how do you work with that? Because it's not an issue of food is there, food is not there. This is where I eat normally, and you're not going to come
around. Oh, you mean this occurs even when there's no food in the bowl?
It's happened, yeah.
Oh, that's a little different.
It's a little
issue.
Territorial thing.
I feed my dogs. Jim's situation is different. Mine's probably more typical. But I feed one dog eats in the kitchen and one eats in the room off the kitchen, the utility room. I've always done that. It has nothing to do with their behavior to one another.
Mm-hmm.
It coexists perfectly, but it circumvents any problem from occurring. And I'm always there. I'm always present. And they eat and they're done and that's it.
Food protectiveness can be a dominance thing. In the case of our dog, we bred him and we're there at the day of his birth, of course, and his mother, it turned out, did not have milk.
Oh, I remember this.
And we didn't figure that out for about a day.
Yeah.
Because the puppies were nursing normally and everything. but they weren't getting anything. We didn't know that. And we have two dogs from that litter, and they're both nuts about food. And the female almost died twice. We should have named her Buffy. from starvation. But she made it, obviously.
So from that day one, they get
so we know
the
why they're
that,
yeah,
yeah
we know why they're food aggressive, and it's got nothing to do with dominance.
It's either food or death.
But they're and the thing that annoys me about it is that when Robin is making food, of course they know that she's doing it, and they just scream.
How old are they now?
4 and a half. They were from the last litter we
had.
And they scream and scream, and it's not the pleasant Malamute Call of the Wild scream. It's this banshee wail that – so I stand by the their crates and where we feed them in the crates and alternately threaten him and reward him with cookies just to get him to shut up. So, but there are many explanations of why dogs that way. But the treatment is generally the same: alternating bowls, putting stuff in it. Rogerson also, I think, suggested that. Rogerson,
yeah, I don't know
very,
where
very
that,
smart guy.
I don't know where that theory came from years ago to take the bowl away.
It's an act of dominance.
Yeah, and it's just so dumb if you think about
when
it.
You have
I just don't agree.
If
with
a
it.
Dog has the problem already, taking the bowl away isn't going to cure it. It's going to exacerbate it. The taking the bowl away is for a puppy. So you say to the puppy who already thinks you're dominant,
right.
I can take your food, I can take your food.
And you lessen the risk of any unintentional injury too, I'm sure.
And
if you adopt a dog from a shelter and you don't know its background, and you know, that would be just such a wrong thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. We're talking dog behavior on Focus this morning with Carolyn Holman, Jim Keel, and we have a call on line one to speak to in Champaign. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about using the food as a reward or that kind of thing. One of my two Australian shepherds is a real hunter. And if I take food, like on an exercise to try to train her to do something, she knows that food is in my pocket, and she just keeps jumping up and down to try to get at the food and doesn't pay any attention to the instructions. She's even done this at some of the dog training classes at the club. And it's just, I don't know what her problem is. We feed her, you know, regularly. But it's like she is always starving and just inhales the food when we do feed her.
She's an honorary Malamute, I think.
could be.
One thing that big-time dog trainers do if they use food, one is don't use food.
Uh-huh.
But two, show her you don't have any food and take a a bag or a bowl or something and put food in it and put it on a table near where you're training.
Mm.
Then you go and do a very simple exercise, like sit and then walk back, get the food, and bring it to her. And then do a healing pattern, a very short one, walk back, so that she understands that
the food's not on your person at all.
You don't
all
have
times.
It, and the only way she's going to get it is if, you know, she does these exercises. Initially, you may have some trouble because she's going to still think you have food.
Right.
So you might want to put on clothes that you haven't had food in. Because, all of my pants have smell of dog cookies.
Right.
Whether they're there or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog, as I said earlier, is going to get their information through their nose. So if you had liver in your pocket in the last 100 years, they're going to smell it.
Right. Yeah.
No, that's a real good suggestion, Jim. That is.
Well, I could pick that up at a seminar.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Food is – I have that problem with Malamutes because – with many Malamutes, I should say, because they become centered on the food and not on anything else. And
right.
It's very difficult. Plus, they won't play with toys. Your Aussies may play with toys.
No, they
don't?
Want nothing to do with toys. And they won't fetch a ball or anything.
That's why I said they're honorary male.
If you threw a dead squirrel, it would be another story.
But. Well, that's
they sound like Malamutes, because that's exactly – Malamutes won't retrieve ever, and they don't like toys except to tear them apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a reward for them.
I would say it would take her – oh, you might have to be patient about this. As Jim said, your dog's going to wonder what happened to it, and it's not going to occur within 5 minutes that she's going to get it, that it's someplace else, but just be patient.
Sure. And she's, again, I keep thinking, I read someplace that dogs are like teenagers. That's, you know, the stage of maturity that they reach, because sometimes she is so, most of the time, she's so obedient and just wonderful. I will just yell no if she's headed to something, you know, and she'll stop right on the dime. They both do. And it's only the girl that has the behavioral problems. The boy is fine.
Is she the hunter?
Yes, she is.
What as an exercise, do you have a closed-in backyard?
Yes.
Where you want, just take some food and keep the boy in. And don't even let him see it. But take some food and kind of throw it in an area, and then let her out and let her see you do it. It's not a secret. And a lot of her hunting instinct can be satisfied if she goes and tries to pick out the little bits of food in the grass.
Oh, I see.
That's a great exercise in winter and summer too. I do that when it's too hot or too cold for them to be exercised with me, then I'll just scatter some kibble out and tell them to go find it, and they have a blast doing that.
Oh, I see. Oh, what a good idea. Mm-hmm.
But we don't want the boy there because they might get into a fight over food, not a food fight.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks for your call. We're taking more questions for Jim and Carol. Dog behavior is the subject, 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. We move on to a caller in line in Urbana on line two. Good morning. Hello. Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
We have an almost four-year-old Cairn Terrier, and he's a good dog, somewhat skittish, and especially when it comes to trucks. Anything truck-like or even SUVs coming along, especially on the cobblestone street that we live on, he just goes crazy with barking. So I wanted to see if you had any suggestions about that.
Is he afraid, or is he – what does he do when you said skittish? I get a different mental picture.
Oh, no, skittish might not be the best word. He just barks very aggressively, so it's – he doesn't.
From inside.
I mean, obviously, it bothers him. I think it's the vibrations in the ground or something.
Is it? Does he bark inside your house or
inside the house, in the yard, on the sidewalk, anywhere?
This is a tough.
The closer the thing comes, buses will set him off.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
buses are good.
Once he got away and attacked a bus, kind of ran around it until I could catch up with him.
He did.
Yeah.
Wow.
Karens, I love Karens, by the way.
And they're so cute.
Yeah, they're great. But I was saying buses are good because they're predictable. One problem you have in dog training, you want to control every variable, and you want to eliminate as many as possible, at least in the beginning. But where you have these random events occurring, you can't
control it.
You have no control over it. You have to be ready at a moment's notice.
Mm.
But I'll suggest what we usually suggest for dogs that bark at people at the door. I have a feeling, especially since it's a Karen, that he somehow thinks that these things are dangerous, and he's barking to alert you to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And probably you are trying to tell him to shut up or, you know, what's the problem? There's no problem here. And he's saying, well, there is. Look at that bus. You know, it's shaking the ground. So when you're training a dog not to bark at the door, you can have a accomplice outside knocking on the door whenever you say, and that way you can be ready to train. Here you have to kind of be ready all the time. But what you do is you let the dog bark. You say, good boy, thank you. Or is it a girl?
A boy, yeah.
Good boy. Thank you for barking. This is really wonderful. Here's a cookie. Now let's go over here and lie down. Okay? So
he sounds a little skeptical with these.
Yeah, right.
Do you hear that?
No. Because he is trying, well, he's trying to alert you to the problem, and you are ignoring the problem. Okay? If he was frightened, there would be a whole other different thing. But it sounds to me like he's trying to scare the SUV and the buses away.
Yeah, the fact that he got out and ran around the bus.
Exactly.
Little bitty dog like that.
But how does that address the question of, I mean, the bus is still going to come by, and the dog thinking he's going to alert you is still going to start barking.
Well, eventually.
You will never stop the dog from barking. But you can cut it down a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And the dog is satisfied because he's alerting. In other words, if a burglar was coming to your house, you don't want the dog to say, "Oh, I can't bark because every time I bark, that there's danger. I get hit on the head."
Right.
So the dog barks a little bit, but when you go over to the kitchen and say lie down in the kitchen, or if you have a Target rug and have the dog do a down on the rug when these things occur, pretty soon the dog will bark and run to the rug.
You know, I'm just thinking of like the dogs that are trained to detect drugs and all those things, bombs. If when he hears something, he's taught to run to you and sit and alert you, and you reward that, that would be perfect. He doesn't necessarily have to go to another area, because I could imagine this terrier movement and activity level, but to alert you, and then you reward that, and then...
Well, presumably there's not going to be somebody standing right by the door all the time, and it will occur, and the dog will run to a neutral corner and sit there and wait for his reward.
But it would be the same premise, more or less.
What you have is a stimulus response problem, and what we're trying to suggest is that the dog get a different response from the same stimulus. You see what I mean? So truck going by, right now the dog, his natural instinct is to – his job as a lower echelon member of the family is to alert everybody else to danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's fulfilling his role. You are denying him that by criticizing him. Ignoring him. So he barks. You say, good dog. He's fulfilled his role. Now go over here, sit down, and be quiet. So when he gets that stimulus, he goes through that and runs over and is quiet and gets a reward rather than chasing something or just continuing to bark all the time. But we haven't changed the stimulus, and we really haven't changed the response.
Because we can't.
You can't
change it.
The stimulus is always – people are going to come to your door knocking all the time.
Or buses or
and
trucks.
Buses are going to drive by. So what you're trying to do is get him to do something else when he gets that stimulus.
Yeah.
And it's admittedly difficult because the stimulus is so random.
But the bus schedule isn't random.
The bus schedule isn't random.
The bus actually doesn't come by our house. This was a couple blocks away.
Oh, okay. Well, it still comes on a schedule. If he's barking at it.
Yeah.
He's barking at a bus a couple blocks away?
No, I was over a couple blocks.
Oh, okay.
I actually had him off the leash.
I was
on the leash, and the bus came by, and he got away. So.
The other thing you can do, it's a little awkward, but if you have a friend with an SUV, just have him drive back and forth.
Drive the dog nuts.
Yeah, a lot of problems aren't, on this vast scale.
Or rent a U-Haul truck or something.
Yeah, anything that he barks at. And unfortunately, they're large objects, but it's easier to get a friend or neighbor to
or,
knock on your door.
Or, here's a solution, move to an area without cobblestone streets. There you go, because that would drive me crazy, too.
It's not a drive, it's a putt. But anyway, what you're trying to do is take the same stimulus and get a different response, one that acknowledges, his dogness, that is, he's alerting you.
Right.
And but also that where he gets a nice reward out of it, too.
Okay, good.
His reward, is when he barks at the SUV and tells it to go away, it goes away.
Yeah.
You know, so he's this is constantly being reinforced.
And then he heads over to his area, gets a cookie, and
yeah,
task
well, he's not going. He's not going anywhere now.
So I tell you what, you call us back. Are we on in November? We don't know yet.
We should be. I think.
So if we're on in November, you call us back in a month and let us know.
Okay. All right. We'll do.
Thanks.
We'll give it a try. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455, and lines are open now. So I guess the corrected behavior would be: truck rolls by, dog goes to the window, barks a couple times, and then decides, you know, I've done my job, I go get my reward.
Right.
Yeah. In a utopian world, that's exactly what will happen.
That's right.
In a month's time.
And working with dogs, it's always utopian.
It's kind of a stump the chumps.
Yeah, it's funny because dogs don't like UPS trucks. Mm-hmm. And it's so intriguing to me because they just sound different than other trucks. The UPS truck driver comes up to your door, they bark, the guy goes away, he drives
away. They're
wearing
shorts, too.
Yeah, I don't think it's the shorts, but it's the whole, as Jim referenced earlier, I'm barking, it goes
Real
away.
Real men don't wear
UPS
shorts.
UPS trucks make a different noise. People get out of them. People go back in them after I've barked, and they're gone. So it's just, it's so intriguing to me.
So they're aware that engine from that UPS truck sounds different from a regular truck.
Even we
else.
Recognize a UPS truck.
Well, true, I guess.
You know, I mean, we know that they sound different.
All right. Let's take a call from Indiana on line 4. Good morning.
Hello. Coincidentally, the water meter man is at my house, and I have a black lab that absolutely goes crazy protecting the house. And he's finally just slowed down, and the stimulus thing worked somewhat, but unfortunately it's the guys across the alley in the backyard, so he's still barking at times. My question deals with cats, if possibly you could give me some information.
Cat behavior maybe not, but dog behavior around cats definitely.
Okay, well, it's more like cat behavior, and I've talked to his friends and other people, even the vet, and each one has basically a particular way of looking at it, but I have four cats besides the black lab, and the fourth cat is an all black. Sort of looks Siamese when you hold up look at the profile, but she was undoubtedly a runt of some family because she's a very small cat, but fully grown, and I got her when she was on death's bed, so to speak, the vet said, but recently she changed her behavior completely. I mean completely. She it took a while for me to find her in the house, and when I did, I noticed it was up high and very strategically located. We have another cat that's a black and white rag mop. That's what we call him here in Indiana, long hair, and he's an extremely aggressive cat. And I have a feeling that he ran her down and bit her or something like that because I saw him do the same thing to one of the other cats, but she more or less stands up to him and swipe him pretty quickly. She moved three times. Each time was to a higher place and, in a sense, more strategically located because you'd have to come through her to get to her. Just recently, she started acting normal, a little bit here, a little bit there. Right now she's outside, which hadn't happened in almost a month, where she's underneath something up high, but she's still out there, and she's doing other things that she had done with me, come to the door and ask to come in, things like that. One person thought perhaps may have been ill and just didn't realize that that's what was going on and that that's what caused the more or less the reclusive behavior. I just wonder if you have any ideas at all to add to the pod. Because it'd be about the 12th person I've asked. And you sense you know, theoretically, you have more connections with cats than most of the people I have. Some have cats, some don't. The vet was sort of stymied. He wanted me to bring an interim for a diagnostic test. I wasn't much into that.
Well, if she's sick, that's the only way you're going to find out if she was ill.
Yeah.
Cats,
well,
it
seems to be over now, so in that sense.
When cats don't feel well, they tend to hide, don't you? With our vast cat knowledge, but I think that that's probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A sudden change in behavior almost always is something has changed.
Okay.
And what changed? Did you get a new cat? Did you move? Did you get a new dog? Did you change their food? Could have been the lab that was bullying her. More likely, it was the other cat. When cats come on a new territory or somebody else's, they will sit for days, you know, just walking back and forth, letting their odor permeate the area and to, just to see what happens. And that might have been what she was doing. She was just laying low, making sure everyone could smell her, making sure no one was going to attack her again, and then cautiously coming down. And that's how they
greet each other. Pretty well. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
That's how they greet each other. In the, and I don't want to say in the wild, but it, domestic cats that are allowed to roam.
Yeah. Well, this aggressive fellow, Sammy, and the other cat who won't take any crap from him, so to speak. And they do a lot of bumping their noses and that kind of stuff. I see them sort of a bonding thing going through at times. And he doesn't usually mess with her, but I saw him take a swipe at her the other day, so I thought maybe he was in one of his moods and that might account for her being reclusive.
Yeah, she's just trying to protect herself.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. You know, whether we're right or wrong, that's the assumption going on now, and I feel a lot better because I can, you know, approach her in more ways now than I have been.
Cats is crazy. You got to realize
That's true. That cartoon crazy cat, you know, just incredible. Whoever, you know, the guy did that, really no cat.
Well, Ignatz kept throwing bricks at him. I'd be upset, too.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for your call. And you, Jim, your kennel has a resident cat now that you just sort of acquired, so maybe you have some insight as far as how crazy cats
is,
so to speak.
She was no doubt a stray, and she's living on our front porch, although she comes in, but because the puppies are in, she's wisely staying out because who knows what a mama dog would do. But we had another cat that was a lot, I don't want to say less friendly, but wouldn't ever come in the house, lived on the front porch, and a stray Tom kept coming by and would eat her food. And she would just kind of sit back. And the only reason I knew that is early one morning I went out and there he was eating the food and there she was just sitting looking at him. But I think he was bullying her, so I yelled at him and threw something, and he came back, but it took about a month.
Let's, before we end the show, we've got a few more minutes, so we may be able to slip one more call in, 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. But in the meantime, the dog training club that you are both I was almost said familiar with.
Affiliated with?
We've heard of them before.
She's the president.
The president would be familiar indeed with the Dog Training Club of CU. So you have a courses that begin every fall. Would it be too late for somebody to?
We just started another session of classes 3 weeks ago. We have four sessions. We have short courses that occur. The best thing to do is go to our website and see what's being offered because we are a busy group.
And that is?
DTCCU.net.
All one word or acronym.
DTCCU.
Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana.
Okay.
And if we're not going to be here in November, and who knows, we also have an obedience trial coming up in early November. I forgot the date, but it's on the web.
Okay. Let's see if we can take this one last call here in St. Joseph. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about two of my children have, they're a Australian Shepherd Lab mix, but they're both big dogs. They look like labs. And they lick me. They just cannot control their tongues when I'm around, and they want to lick all the time. How do I stop that?
Well, do they do that to your children? Are your children grown?
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I have grandchildren. Somewhat, but not as persistent as what they are with me. Now, I was there when they were born. Does that have anything to do with it?
Yeah, it could. Licking is a greeting. They don't lick you once you're in the house and walking around.
Yeah.
They keep following you around and licking you.
Time, yes.
Like your arms and legs and hands and.
Yeah, especially my hands. They just keep.
Maybe it's a lotion that she uses. Well, maybe that's appealing to them. Maybe it's a hand lotion you wore.
Do you wear
when
liver
born.
On your hands?
Well, like Lady Gaga's
liver.
Dress.
Yeah, meat. That's a little unusual. I mean, it's not unusual for a dog to lick people when they greet them. Mm-hmm. It is a little bit unusual not to stop. But if you were there when they were born, they may have very positive imprinting, you know, and they regard you as a close relative.
Well, okay.
And they're just trying to show their submission. I would, when you go over there and you know you're going there, I'd get some dog cookies. And do they know how to sit?
Yeah.
Almost every, you know, most dogs are.
Yeah.
Tell them to sit and, you know, count to three and give them a cookie. And I think, and just keep doing that, except count to four the next time, and just longer and longer. And I think what's going to happen is they're going to start looking to you for cookies, and they only get it when they sit.
How old are these dogs, by the way?
They're two, going on three.
Oh, so this has been going on for quite a while.
Oh, yes, forever, yeah.
The other less appealing kind of a mechanical way of doing it is to, instead of putting liver on your hands, put
bitter apple
or
yuck is another one. Yuck is another product.
Okay, where do you get that? Because what I've thought about.
Any pet store carries it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm familiar with bitter apple. What's yuck? What's
same thing. It's just called yuck.
Okay.
The problem is there are many dogs that really like the taste of that stuff.
Yes, it's not always the deterrent that you're hoping for.
So you could put cayenne pepper on your hands or something. I wouldn't do those things, but that's an
so you can't even sit down at your children's home and relax because they're licking you constantly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, that's rather maddening.
It's just a constant battle. I was over at the one last night, and I came before she got home, and I took him outside then sat down at a table with my arms up on the table and my head down, and he finally, you know, would go lay down a little bit. But
you can also try the opposite, and that is to pet them vigorously when they start doing it.
Yeah,
and maybe they'll stop then. Okay.
You know, because at first that was what was strange, because he wanted to lick me all the time, but he was head shy. I mean, if you reach to rub his head or what, he'd kind of duck.
All right. Thanks for your call. And with that,
we're out of time.
We're out of time. That was pretty. We've got to cut it off now. Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm from the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next month. At least Celeste will, I believe, on Focus.